Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 200. Yes, we finally got to episode 200. And although we record our Dream Show episodes every month now, every 4 weeks, when we did start, which was back in 2009, we were doing them weekly for a while. It got a bit exhausting. But we kind of wanted to get some momentum going and really get the show out there and get, and we certainly have built that audience, and you all have been absolutely wonderful supporters of the show. So to celebrate episode 200, I thought we'd do something a little bit different. We've invited a guest onto the show, and he is Anthony Mativier. And towards the end, he does bring on his own dream. So we do go through our usual formula of the guest bringing on a dream, which we then explore and interpret. Now, usually, as you will know, we have a guest on the show, they bring in the dream, and we spend the whole hour just exploring that one dream. Now, with Anthony's dream, we spend about 5 minutes at the end, but we still go pretty deep, and it's really great. And also, at the total end of the show, I've got a little extra something for you when we get there. But the whole main body of the show, and the reason I brought Anthony Mativier on today, is that he has a special method in helping you to remember your dreams and helping you to remember more of the details in your dreams. Anthony Mativier has a business called Magnetic Memory Method, and you can actually find him at magneticmemorymethod.com. That's Magnetic Memory Method, all one word, .com. And he has his own special approach to building memory palaces, which you'll hear all about, and using those to be able to remember anything in your life, not just dreams, but all kinds of things, including learning foreign languages, being able to remember things that are deeply meaningful in our life. And of course, dreams and working with dreams, well, you can't get much more deeply meaningful than that. So it wasn't long before Anthony turned his expertise into creating methods to help people remember more of their dreams. And he's certainly been exploring and working with his own dreams for a long time. So I'm really excited to bring you this conversation. And then following that, I have a little piece about using dream alchemy. You know, you've remembered your dream, you've worked with your dream, you've interpreted your dreams, and then it's the time to bring in dream alchemy. So we have a little bit on that. So before we bring you Anthony Mativier, just a little reminder of my website addresses. My website address, janetheresa.com. That's Teresa without an H. And the Dream Academy, which is my online learning platform, which is dream-academy-online.com. Of course, you can easily get there from janetheresa.com. They're all interconnected. Or find me on social media, primarily at Facebook or Instagram. But now, on with the show, and here's Anthony. Welcome to The Dream Show, Anthony.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's one of my favorite topics in the world.
Dreams.
Yes.
It's amazing, isn't it? We all dream, even though we don't all remember them, and everybody's got that curiosity about them, but not everyone would say it's one of my most favorite topics in the world. It's kind of it's something that everybody shares, and yet it's a niche topic as well, isn't it?
It is very niche, and I'm sort of doing some work around making it less so, because I think it's one of the most powerful tools that people can use in multiple ways, especially when you start to realize what impact it can make on realizing how much fantasy you're in every single day. So you can dissolve some of that dream fantasy distinction and get a lot more out of life as a result.
I'm absolutely with you there, and I love the way you summarize that, breaking through the illusions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
For those of you listening who have just gone straight to hit play and haven't read the little promo bit, my guest today is Anthony Mativier from magneticmemorymethod.com. And I'm really excited to have Anthony on today's show, being our episode 200, for lots of reasons, but including the fact that although we are going to look at a dream, one of Anthony's dreams later, Anthony is an expert in memory, and one of his most cherished areas is teaching people how to remember their dreams. So I thought this would be a fabulous thing to do on our 200th episode. So Anthony, before we start, can you give us a little background on how you got into memory?
Yeah, well, the story really starts when I was in university. And I was getting near to the beginning of the end with my doctoral studies to get a PhD in humanities. And I had some issues with bipolar disorder and depression. And I got to a period where I had hundreds of books and articles to read. I had a language requirement coming up, all the fun stuff that they put you through before they're going to let you into the ivory tower, if they're going to. And I just couldn't concentrate. I couldn't focus and was getting more and more depressed. So I started to avoid life and prepare what I have come to think of as the emergency paycheck. And I started studying magic tricks. And in that, I encountered the holy grail of magic, which is called any card at any number, which is you say a card in the deck and you say any number between 1 and 52, and lo and behold, that card is in that position. And it turns out that there's a number of ways to do it, one of which is to legitimately have a deck memorized and then do some fancy shuffling. And I thought, this is impossible. I can't even read French philosophy, so how am I going to memorize a deck of cards? But I followed the instructions to the letter, and lo and behold, within 15 minutes, I had memorized the deck of cards in a particular order called the Tamiris stack. And I instantly saw right in that moment that, holy cow, if I could just get French philosophy, Greek philosophy, all this bizarre terminology, all the vocabulary I needed to learn onto cards and memorize it in this exact same way, I'll have no problem. And it turned out that even though it's not an antidepressant, it builds your confidence like nothing else. And so I started to feel really, really good even when I was feeling bad. And so long story short, I went and got my doctorate, went and got a wonderful research grant after that, and just dove right in with learning German because I was in Germany, and just have had an amazing adventure ever since. And I got into dreams while I was in Germany, and I started to apply these memory techniques to dreaming itself in some interesting ways.
That's absolutely fantastic. I love the way, you know, on another level, that what we perceive as the lows in life, you know, your depression, dealing with bipolar, the looming shadow of the PhD thesis coming up, how those things that we can consider as the negatives or the lows can actually hold for us the greatest gifts once we realize what they are and work with them.
Yeah, the bliss switch often turns on during our darkest moments, sometimes out of desperation and so forth. But I think one of the lessons from the story that I would point out that's so important is that it was procrastination of a sorts leading me to the answer. And we often vilify procrastination, yes. But I think actually often it's a survival technique, and we're doing a lot of unconscious processing while we're doing that. And so we shouldn't punish ourselves if we're taking a break and really be attentive to what we might actually be doing underneath the surface or in the subconscious mind and so forth, because we're often giving ourselves clues to what to do next.
Absolutely. Taking all the blinkers off, getting out of busy mode and allowing yourself to just be.
Yeah.
In many
ways.
Yeah,
if you don't do it consciously, you will be forced to somehow by health and whatnot.
That's right.
It seems anyway.
So I'm just curious, did you go straight into developing, researching and teaching various memory methods after that, or did you also pursue your academic career in humanities?
No, I stuck with the scholarly road for some period of time after that. And I used to just show the students these techniques as a kind of aside by memorizing all their names, and people would say,
How do you do that?
And so I would just give them a little short lesson in it. Or if someone was especially impressed by how my German had developed so quickly, I would just say, well, this is what I'm doing in my mind. And it wasn't until I finished my research grant, it was a Mercator grant from the German government, and I was looking for another job and wasn't able to find one, that I wound up teaching at an after school, which is something that was in Vancouver area, Burnaby in Canada, by an amazing entrepreneur named Heidi Windy, who really took me under her wing. And I was writing curriculum for her, and one day a teacher didn't show up, and so I wound up in the classroom with these students. And it was just one of these situations where, okay, all this stuff is boring, let's get through it as quickly as we can. 15 minutes later, I said, what do you guys want to learn next? They said, you're the teacher. And so I said, how about we memorize the alphabet backwards? And so I showed them this memory stunt. They nailed it so quickly. It takes about 5 minutes to do. And then they said, what next? And so I taught them all these memory stunts, and they said, could you write that stuff down for us? And that became the basis of a book that went on to be a bestseller. And I just saw that this was happening, and I thought, well, the academic thing is, the universities are crumbling, political correctness is destroying everything about it, so I'm going to focus on this. And I did, and it just caught on. And I think part of the reason why it caught on is because I just am very technical about these techniques in a way that hasn't really been out there before. And coming with an actual mission to using them for things that are actually useful in your life, because most of my quote unquote competition out there, they're always teaching people shopping list memorization and random words and stuff that just is really hard to connect to. And I'm always focusing on foreign language vocabulary and other information you can use right now that instantly makes your life better and you really feel it. So I think that's
yes, and of course dream work, which
what
you know
I was doing in humanities doesn't have that.
And of course dream work, which for those of us that are that have explored dreams and got into dreams, understand is very meaningful and very practical. But for people standing on the edge who probably won't be listening to this podcast, who have never really delved into their dreams, will go, how do you put dreams in the same basket as teaching memory for things that are practical and right now and in the moment? But we know, don't we?
Yes, well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why that I do it, and one of them comes from my own history with dream psychoanalysis. So I had undergone psychoanalysis based on dreaming with a guy named Robert Lanks, who's written an immense amount of material on dreams for psychoanalytic purposes,
yes,
and especially for understanding unconscious communication.
Yes.
And his theory was that if you show up at the session and you start to tell your dreams, then you're going to encode in your recitation of the dream material a comment on the analyst.
Yes.
And then if you can start to see how you're commenting on the person you're speaking to in the stories that you're telling, then you'll understand unconscious communication and you'll be able to decode unconscious communication coming towards you and strengthen your subconscious or your upconscious mind as a sort of virus filter that stops you from being so deeply affected by the anxieties that we're sharing with one another. Because there's predator anxiety, there's prey anxiety, and then there's existential anxiety. And he gets into all this stuff.
Mm.
And I kind of ruined my psychoanalysis by sneakily reading all his books and not telling him. And so all my communication was encoding to him messages that I was actually reading all his stuff, and that was part of my resistance in the psychoanalysis. And I eventually just admitted it, and I had this edification like you wouldn't believe, and you know, it was very powerful. But it was all based on coming to the session and sharing your dreams, and so I've seen it as a healing tool, really, but a healing tool with an eye to understanding unconscious communication.
Yes, that's wonderful. And this has brought you now to Brisbane. I know that you've been living in Brisbane, the same city in which I live. And actually, in a short chat we had just before we started recording, you said that you will have been here a year on the February the 2nd, which is actually the day that this podcast is going live. So we've got some wonderful synchronicity happening here. Lead us in now. You know, people have been listening to the podcast and working with me, of course, for reading my books for many, many years, and know and understand the value of interpreting your dreams and working with your dreams. But often the first question is, but how can I remember more of my dreams, or how can I remember more detail? So, you know, I have my methods, but I'm really excited because I know yours are much better. So would you take the floor now and take us through how to remember your dreams?
Absolutely. Well, I would start that I pretty much begin with the standard techniques, which involve putting a date on a piece of paper, which is tomorrow's date, intending to remember dreams during the night, and then actually, whether you remember something or not, in the morning, writing down what you remembered, or if you don't remember anything, just simply writing down, I don't remember any dreams. That seems to me the foundation. That's how I developed the initial set of skills. And, you know, I got to a point where I was getting up 6 or 7 times a night, and I thought, I'm just getting exhausted. And also it was doing something that I didn't want, which was that it was triggering a lot of lucid dreaming. And the reason why I don't want lucid dreaming, or at least I dissuade myself from having lucid dreaming, is because I'm in control too much of the time. And yes. I really want to be in that dream experience and just remember more. So what I started to do is I knew these techniques for memory, particularly the memory palace technique. And so instead of getting up to write down the dreams, I would create images that would help me remember the gist of a dream narrative or a dream image, and I would place it in a memory palace. So I may need to explain what a memory palace is for people who aren't who are unfamiliar with that term.
Yes.
But that was the basis of it. How could you still record dreams so that you remember them with the traditional technique of getting up and writing them down, but without having to get up and writing them down? And so that led me to bring the two together. So
I totally agree with you there. And I wind back my years to 20, 25 years ago and shared that experience of getting up 6 to 7 times a night. And I'm also not too much into lucid dreaming because I want my unconscious to paint its own pictures and speak to me rather than the other way around. So I'm totally with you there. So, now, I know what a memory palace is, and probably quite a few people do listening, but there will be some people listening that do not. So maybe if you could start by describing the memory palace and then take it into the realm of dreams, that would be wonderful, Anthony.
Yeah, once we have that, then I can really boost the technique a little bit more for the dreaming. I think we have to take a step back from the memory palace first and just talk about how that memory is about association. So all memory techniques, all mnemonics, come from the basis of associating what you don't know with things that you already do know. So we often do this all the time. Like, for example, your name's Jane. So I was thinking, okay, so who can I get in mind so I remember this name? So I think of Jane Seymour. I think of Jane Campion. I try to think of all the Janes that I can in the world. There's a Lou Reed song, or I guess a Velvet Underground song, and so forth. And if that worked, then I'll remember that. And what I'm doing there is I'm using the power of association as the basis of how memory works. This works chemically in the brain because we have neural networks and actual chemical sheaths that wrap around neurons and synapses, and they get stronger and stronger depending on how many connections that we make to a piece of information. So the memory palace is using the foundational free resource that all people have in abundance, which is called spatial memory. And spatial memory becomes a mnemonic device that we can use when we take a home and we make a specific journey throughout our home, and we start to associate information that we don't know but we want to know with this foundational spatial memory that we already have. So we're using information that we already know to associate with things that we don't know. And so now, knowing that I have an apartment here in Brisbane and the room that I'm in has four corners, and I want to use this resource to remember the name Jane, then I see Jane Campion in a fistfight with Jane Seymour in the corner of the room. And so I'm building even more brain chemistry that's going to make very, very strong neural pathways, neural networks that will have a greater chance of me remembering what it was the more connections that I bind together. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, absolutely. So give us a demonstration of it, a very short, maybe a list of six things that you might want to remember and how you plot those in your home palace in Brisbane.
All right, so I'm learning these now, and there's a phrase I wanted to learn the other day, which is "bia tai dan xin," which means "don't worry about it." So in the corner by the balcony, I saw the bee from the Bee Movie, who's voiced by Jerry Seinfeld, I believe. Yep. And he's got a tie that he's rather rigorously putting around the neck of a guy named Dan from my childhood. And from this action, it's forcing the Chinese heart character out of his chest, because I already know that Xin means heart, or it is the heart character, sometimes represented that way. So I don't know if that's going to make sense to anybody, but if you imagine a bee, and then a tie, and then a guy named Dan with the heart character coming out, then it's very easy for me to remember bia tai dan xin.
Beautiful. So Absolutely beautiful. The accent, however, is all up to you. You got the words, but the accent.
You're right. There are tones there, and to remember the correct tones, then I use another technique, which is called the major method. The major method lets us associate letters with numbers. And so, for example, the final two tones were the ones that I really struggled with because they are both first tones, which means it has to be dan, shin, like kind of sung that way. But because it's two first tones and 11 would be one and one, I have the toad from the old Bugs Bunny cartoons there. anyway, we're not here to talk about numbers, but there's a whole technique of association using these same principles that would help you memorize Chinese tones. And those tools can come in handy for lots of other things besides just numbers and languages and so forth. And they're really quick to develop and build. But that's basically how it works.
So before we go into dreams, I guess some people might be thinking, does your house get overloaded? You know, when you move into your room and you've used your memory palace of your apartment for maybe at least 100 different things that you need to remember, are there too many things in each corner? Are you able to look in the corner and just see the, you know, Jane Campion and Jane Seymour having a fist fight, or are all the other things you've placed in the corner, in the same corner, competing for your attention?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's one of the most important questions, and it's been pondered for literally thousands of years that it's been talked about. And the one of the differences in my training, as opposed to all the others, is that I make it very, very clear that one memory palace is not enough. Mm-hmm. It's never enough. It's one is the most dangerous number in the world when it comes to getting good with these techniques. So you want to have multiple memory palaces, which luckily is very easy. So one of the ways that I teach this technique is to use the alphabet as a structure that enables you to create at least 26 memory palaces. So if you have a friend named Anne, then you use Anne's house as your A palace. If you went to Brocklehurst High School like I did, then that becomes the B memory palace.
Ah, yes.
I was an employee at a movie theater one time. My boss was named Zoltan. So he's that movie theater is the Z memory palace.
He got sorted.
Yeah, I've thought as deep as possible into these techniques and so forth. And most people get that. They understand it. They might not be able to complete the whole alphabet, but they'll get a sufficient understanding of how it works because they're creating multiple memory palaces.
Mm.
Then you have the option of using memory palaces. So to answer your question of would Jane get confused with, say, the B from the B movie? And the answer is if you let it. There's a phenomenon in memory called ghosting, which is when images compete with each other or an image stays. It's like a fossil. I'd rather use the word fossil, actually.
Yes.
And the ghosting thing is kind of a negative term that they use because it scares away the new memory.
So
another phenomenon.
Yeah, go on.
Go ahead.
You go.
There's another term which is not exactly the same thing, but it's close enough, which is called the ugly sister effect, which is, you know, you're the prince looking for Cinderella and they keep pushing the sisters that you don't want in a way. And so that can happen. But I always spin this positively and I say, if that's happening, celebrate because the tools are working. And now just figure out a way that they can work in cooperation and then get busy making new memory pals.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So you don't have this issue.
Because
a lot of people have.
That's the thing that I'm thinking with dreams. You know, if you're waking 6 or 7 times a night and wanting to at least place the gist of those dreams in your memory palaces, and that's 7 days a week, so that's up to 49 dreams a week, 49 palaces. Do we get overloaded when we're looking at dreams?
It's never happened to me. And I use my bedroom over and over and over and over again, and there's never any problem with it. Now, that can be because I have more practice with this, but it's also because I just simply don't get fixated on problems. I only fixate on what I'm trying to do. If something from the day before appears, then all I do is incorporate it in the new material. So, for example, this morning I had this strange scenario where I was pouring myself into cups, and then only a portion of myself was needed to create a full new version of myself from these cups. And when I woke up, I just saw 3 cups, and they're like the cups and balls from Magic. And I put them up in the ceiling corner to my right in the bedroom. And there was this roller coaster from some time ago, actually. And I don't know why it was just appearing there, but I didn't see it as an interference. all I did is I turned the roller coaster cars from roller coaster cars into these three cups. So I used it as an aid rather than an interference. And that's what I teach people to do, is just don't get caught up in the interference. Use it as a tool. It's there to help you.
Yes. So that makes perfect sense. So when you're actually placing a dream in the memory palace, or the gist of a dream in a night, do you, you know, for example, with that one, do you just place the one symbol or the one feeling that's going to enable you to, as you say, be a memory aid and enable you to recall the whole dream in the morning? Or do you tend to place that symbol or that drama or that event from the dream and try and work back and forward from that while you're still placing it in the memory palace? How do you actually, you know, you wake with a little bit more than just a grab of a dream? How do you actually, for our listeners, how do you actually proceed at that point of semi-awakening and placing it in your palace?
Well, really, with over time, with practice, you can get a lot of bang for your buck from just very, very concise and brief images that will help you trigger a larger amount of recall. And I should say that even though this technique is in play, I will still, after awakening, write down the dreams from my recall of the images. So it's almost like a temporary container. And so you want to think about what your strategy is and what it is that you're looking for. And so let's say you wanted to, you knew that this dream narrative or a vignette had at least three or four sequences or characteristics or people in it that you wanted to remember. Then rather than just using the one corner and trying to all cram it up there, then I would go to the next corner or even the center of the wall. And incidentally, you'd want to create the memory palace strategically before that you start this, which we should maybe go through. But
yes,
the idea is that you're not cramming a whole bunch of, you're not creating a palimpsest of images in one area, but you want to give space between each one so that you have a sense of journey. The scientific language here is elaborative encoding. So when you take a piece of information, like say you're pouring your own body into cups, then elaborative encoding is taking first the spatial memory, so the corner, upper ceiling corner of the bedroom, and placing cups there, in this case cups in a, as a replacement for a roller coaster car. And then I'm making them really big in my mind. I'm focusing on them being colorful and bright and really clanging them together so there's a bit of a sense of sound. So I remember that these are cups, right? And then I don't worry about the rest of it, because just magically, and this can, again, can be the practice effect that I've had, I just think, what were those cups all about? And then I go, oh yeah, I was pouring myself into them.
Yes.
And then through this process. Now, if I didn't have that success rate over time and I had a confidence in remembering the rest of the vignette and the scenario, then what I would do is I would move to the second magnetic station in this memory palace, and then I would have an image of my body pouring itself into the cups. And then I might go to the next corner and then see the part of the dream where my body was being poured into new bodies. And even though it was only a portion of myself, it still grew into a full whole self. And that would take place in the next corner. But typically I just put another dream on these different stations in the memory palace, because I am able to recall a sufficient amount. And my strategy is not so much to recall with absolute 100% clarity all the time. I think I get more of that by being willing to let things go. I don't have scarcity around this at all. I just try to get the core image and make sure that I remember it. And so I use this as much elaborative encoding as I can by including that it's big and visual and bright, and get some sound in there if I can. What does it feel like? And maybe if there's a conceptual nature, like for example, I made sure that to think about these as magic cups from the cups and balls routine, which is a concept, and get as much going on in there. Actually, if people want to remember the full range of what I call the magnetic modes, you can remember cog cave, or a cave filled with cogs. That would be C-A-V-K-O-G. So you want to get, so C is for concept, O is for olfactory, which is smell, and V is for visual, or sorry, we'll go with G, which is gustatory, and then the K is kinesthetic, the A is auditory, and then V is visual, so concave. Mm-hmm. And if you get as many of those things going on at once in your elaborative encoding, to use that scientific term again, your chances of recalling that is just goes way up. Are you going to nail them all in your first shot? Maybe not. But if you have that in mind and you really work on that, then memorizing dream elements, memorizing names, everything under the sun gets way easier because of what we talked about before. This is actually happening in the chemical nature of the human brain.
Yes.
You're making the connections stronger and stronger and increasing your chance of recall. All you have to do after that is actually recall the information, which is part of strengthening it in your mind.
Exactly. You're bringing in all the senses that does solidifies the memory. And I agree with you. And if I, when I wake up in the morning, I will lay very still, often in the position that I knew that I was dreaming in. And then one by one, a symbol or a feeling will appear from each of the dreams I've had that night. And if I then get anxious about, oh, what was that dream? It was so exciting. I've got to remember. It's gone. But if I just take myself off that anxiety hook, it doesn't matter if this is all I recall, that's fine too. At that sublime moment, the rest of the dream fills in. So it is taking, as you say, the one symbol or the gist from the dream and not being anxious and, grabbing it from your memory palace or from whatever way of remembering that you choose, and the rest just fills in so neatly. So you said while you were describing that so well that maybe I need to go through creating the palace. So for all our very excited listeners, can you take us through how to create the palace so that when they go to bed tonight, their palace, their own personal palace, is all ready and they can start placing their cups in the corners?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first thing that I would suggest is get out a piece of paper. And even maybe before that, just decide that you're going to become a Memory Palace master and get a memory journal that's going to be devoted to creating memory palaces. And as I teach this, and it works for reasons that have everything to do with brain chemistry, you want to draw the memory palace as if you're drawing a floor plan. Don't get too worried about it. Don't feel like you have to be an artist. The point is that you're getting your hand involved to unlock more areas of the brain. And so you can start usually with a square that represents most buildings. And if you were to go to my website and register there for a free course, it will show student memory palaces on the screen and you'll be able to see what this actually looks like. But what's really important is, in order to make a memory palace super effective, is you do exactly the opposite of what most people teach. And if you've read a description of creating a memory palace before, they'll usually say, start at your door and move inside. So why is that the worst advice ever? Well, you're leading yourself into a dead end eventually in most buildings. So I reverse the process and get rid of the scarcity. And I figure out where in the memory palace is the dead end. And I start there and move outward. This will often lead to seashelling, I call it, because you'll go either counterclockwise or clockwise, and you'll move throughout the building that way. But you can't really strategize this if you don't draw it out. Mm-hmm. So it may not be that you nail it the first time, but if I just think of the place that I'm in right now, the best place to actually start is either in the master bedroom or on the balcony. And I have to give up one of them because if I try to include them both, it won't be the most effective memory palace it can be. But I'll start in a particular corner that will let me use the entire room without crossing my own path and then move out the door. So that's station one, which in this case is the southwest corner. And then the next corner is going to be the northwest. And then the next one will be the northeast. East and then the north south, and then I will go out the door of that room and then use the next part without crossing my own path and without leading myself into a dead end, because I'm leading myself out to the apartment door, and then I could use the elevator, I could use every floor of the elevator down to the floor and so on. And the whole point is to not cause scarcity in the brain and to not create what I call memory palace claustrophobia. So those are principles to keep in mind. I think it really helps to see this if that's useful. But generally, those are the two very, very huge concepts here. don't cross your own path if you can avoid it, and don't lead yourself into dead ends. And when you're starting, just think about maybe just the one room. How can you make four corners in one room work really well? For dreams, I wouldn't necessarily suggest this for things like foreign language vocabulary, but for dreams, I have found it's much more effective to use the ceiling corners rather than the floor corners, and that has to do with where you are when you're using it, because you're lying on your back. Mm-hmm. And there is something, we know this in brain science, and especially the brain science of mental imagery and spatial memory, is that there is a relationship to where your head is pointing in a particular case, and a one-to-one correspondence between where information is encoded in the brain. So that's why I started to use the ceilings, because that just is the natural direction that my head is pointed. Which is not necessarily necessary, but it helps.
Looking up connects you with your visual senses too, doesn't it? So, you know, as our dreams are highly visual, when we're picturing things, we look up. When we're thinking about words or hearing words, we often look down. So there's that sense of looking up and placing images in the corner, even though you're bringing in all the different senses, seems to make sense. So you're saying that you only use the corners in a room, the four corners in the room. You don't place images or symbols on any of the surfaces or any other area of the room?
Well, I will, relative to what the purpose of the memory palace is. But more and more I'm finding, and it could be just due to experience over time and more strategy in my learning projects, more and more I'm just using the corners because it's just so much faster and more efficient.
Yes.
For large scale pieces of information. And incidentally, I also now have developed what I think of as the pillar technique, which is in many cases starting from the ceiling and moving down in a column, which works really well for Chinese, for example. So when I was telling you that Bia Tai Dan Xin, it's actually the B is up in the top corner, and then below that is the Tai, and then Dan, and then so it has a vertical force to it. That won't necessarily work for everything under the sun, but it's really good for that. So you could try that with your dreams as well to maximize the use of that corner. Start at the ceiling and then quote unquote build down or create downward.
That's a great tip. So you can have one light for each corner and keep on going out of the building from there. So people, just to draw this part to a close now, Anthony, people have drawn their palace in their palace memory book, and they go to sleep, and then as they wake up during the night, the odd image that they've got, they place mentally in their, just making sure that people understand this, they place mentally in their palace. They're not taking out the journal and jotting it down. They're placing it mentally in their palace. And then when they wake up in the morning, they either mentally recall their memory palace, or they open their journal to look at the plan, and that may jog their memory. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, basically you have options. One of the reasons why that I talk about what I do in the business, I created Magnetic Memory Method, is because I'm teaching you methods that you develop into your own processes. And if you get to the point that you can be systematic about it, that's great. But I'm not really talking about a system, like just adopt my system. I'm more talking about give these things a try. These are the methods that I use to develop how I get to being more systematic about this. But every person has preferences. And so, you know, you mentioned looking up when you're visual. Well, that may or may not be the case for all people, because some of us are more strongly oriented towards audio conceptual, for example. Mm. And I haven't looked at all the different ways. We certainly know that we do gestures when we're thinking. But you may find, yeah, you know, I really need to get more sounds in this rather than pictures. Or some people have aphantasia, which is the lack of a mind's eye. They don't see pictures at all.
Yes.
So they need to explore these techniques from a kinesthetic, auditory, conceptual, gustatory, olfactory basis as much as possible, because they don't really have that option. So I would again say that nothing that I'm saying is dogmatic. It's more about these are the things that almost certainly will work for you if you get in and play around. But what you described is more or less on the nail.
That's absolutely wonderful. So what you've given people today is not only a method of remembering more of their dreams, also you've given them a lot of fun, But also you've given them a method for remembering all sorts of other things in their lives, including with your very beautiful and simple example of the Chinese phrase that you learned, an idea about how to go about learning foreign languages as well. And I know that through your site, magneticmemorymethod.com, you do have books and online courses and materials and resources that people can further investigate and develop those. So, you know, that's fantastic. So because it's the Dream Show, would you like to bring, I don't know whether it's going to be the cups one you mentioned, but would you like to bring a dream for us to look at very briefly? We usually, of course, as you know, take an hour to look at a dream, so we're not going to do that at all. We might spend a few minutes, but to continue the theme of the Dream Show, would you like to bring us a dream, Anthony?
Sure. Well, maybe I will do some brain and memory exercise here for myself and think of the one that I connected this one to, which had to do with the roller coaster.
Yes.
And as I recall it, that dream involved, now that I'm speaking it kind of reminds me of the Dragon's Tail Mountain Range in the island of Gran Canaria near Las Palmas in Spain. And it was more isolated than that, but it was essentially a roller coaster that went along a spiky mountain range. And there was one part of the ride where, it's hard to describe, but there was sort of an island where the roller coaster rail broke off, and the roller coaster cars had to jump off of the long extended range and then boost more power by landing on this really small part and then jump again to where the longer part of the mountain range started again and go through a sort of cave. And the Matterhorn at Disneyland sort of comes to mind as well here. But at that landing part, after they hit the central part of the track that they had to jump to and essentially bounce off of, there was a person there who was looking into a kind of something like a computer a monitor that was more like a scroll. I find that I don't really see computers in my dreams, but there's usually some sort of stand-in image there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something about whatever that woman was doing there that was at the same time a helping gesture to allowing this car to successfully navigate into that area and also creating a barrier towards it. And so it was one of those loop dreams where it just kept repeating and repeating and repeating. And sometimes it would succeed and sometimes it wouldn't. There didn't seem to be any sort of rhyme or reason to it. Mm. But it was sort of like a mission where you had to complete the level. And then when you did, no matter, it would just reset as it would even if you didn't complete it. And that just went on and on. And I thought it was just a neat thing. At the time, I didn't think about this particular range in Gran Canaria, nor did I think about the Matterhorn. So thanks for the opportunity to revisit it, because this is a tip that I will give people. And this is why that this is such a powerful tool for memory.
That is
when we associate to our dreams, we can think about new memory palaces. And I can think, holy cow, I spent a month on the island of Gran Canaria, and there's at least 15, if not 50 places that I could create new memory palaces from. So I always ask my people in my dream recall intensive group, when they report their dreams, I say, okay, so what's the memory palace here that you could excavate from your past?
Mm.
And there are other tools such as bridging figures and so forth that they could also excavate along with the dreams. So, yeah, I now have recovered a multitude of possible memory palaces that had gone to waste.
Yes, I love that. So you've got, within the dream, you've got symbols that can take you back to cross-reference to not only past dreams, but what was happening to you at that time. So because I love the way that you demonstrated there, often when we tell a dream, we notice connections as we're telling them, consciously or unconsciously. Mm-hmm. And you brought up not only the Dragon Tail Mountain Range in Spain, but you also referenced the Disneyland Matterhorn. So for you, what do those two completely different mountain ranges have in common? What's the unifying factor between Dragon Tail Mountain Range and Disneyland Matterhorn for you?
Well, if I were just to free associate and try to avoid any resistance, it may be that I'm missing Europe very much. I lived in Europe for 8 years, and those even if the Matterhorn is in Anaheim, California, when I visited as a kid, it's based on a European mountain. And we're also thinking of moving out of Brisbane to perhaps more, I believe it's called the Glass Mountain Range.
Ah, yes.
Maybe moving to Mullaney, I believe is what the name of the town is called. And so maybe that's what I'm processing here. But there is a kind of, I mean, I'm from British Columbia originally, so I long for mountains, and it's great to see them, but we need them as big as we can get. So there are mountains to be seen in Brisbane, but maybe that's what's going on. But yeah, I certainly am going through, after a year of being away from Europe, I am kind of starting to have what the Germans call Heimweh, which is homesickness. Mm-hmm. And but I don't really have a home, so I'm trying to find a home, and I like it here very much. So that
it is a beautiful place.
Unconscious journey.
And everything that you're saying there, you know, you're saying, you mentioned an island. You mentioned how isolated the Dragon Tail Mountain Range is when you mentioned it, but you also mentioned how the roller coaster was kind of on an island, or the bit with the woman and the computer scroll was kind of like an island there. So there's that sense there of island and isolated as well. So, you know, that ties in with you saying just on one level, you know, I'm missing Europe. I'm on a bit of an island. I'm isolated from that to some extent. And you also mentioned two jumps in the dream, and you mentioned two possible places to go, to the Glass Mountains or Mullaney. So that may be a bit. If we talk about the roller coaster, you know, in what sense at the moment would you see your life as a bit like a roller coaster?
Well, you know, I work online. My core business is the Magnetic Memory Method site. And although I'm developing a few other things, that's just my main focus. And in many ways, it's like being on a roller coaster, working online, and you're kind of always creating the track in front of you as you go along. And there's a race to anticipate the next bend, and you kind of have to create the next bend in participation with the bend creators, who won't necessarily tell you what's coming up next. And I'm referring to Google and YouTube and Facebook and all of these people who make the decisions. And it's I wouldn't call it a love-hate relationship, but it's something like that, where it's very much like a roller coaster. There's so many thrills, but also so many chills. And
yes.
One wonders why we surrender ourselves to the torture of change that's completely out of our hands. Willingly, which is
and then we remember by looking back that this leads us to lead a more meaningful life in the long term. But at the moment, when you're stranded on the roller coaster and trying to lay down the next bit of track, it can be very scary, can't it?
Yeah, it certainly is, and it's a wild ride for sure. And one is reminded of it far too often. So
you mentioned in the dream you know, you're having to boost power and jump. So has there been a sense in the couple of days before the dream where, you know, along this theme of the roller coaster of working an internet business, has there been a theme of I have to boost my power and I don't really feel like it because I'm tired? Or how can I bring more power? You know, that. How would you relate boosting power to what's going on for you at the moment, boosting power and jumping?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing I would think of is one of the risks that I decided to take was do more with paid traffic, which is an odd thing. It's somewhat against my values, I suppose. But because I have gotten into a strange mixture of almost workaholism matched by free content that I give very happily, there is some kind of human need to actually take a break and have some healthy balance in all of this. And so one of the great things about working online is you're able to just give freely. And as some of the Buddhist teachings would say, you know, when you say, well, you know, I can't just keep giving and giving and giving. And they would say, yeah, well, so what if you do?
Right? But yes.
at the same time, what I mean with the changes and so forth is that it used to be that you would set something up like on YouTube and that would last forever. You were able to give and give and give and it would just keep on giving. But now they make a change in the algorithm and then you got to get up and rebuild again and again. And they want you to just keep feeding it content and content. And it's got to be fresh and it's got to be new. And so how do you do that while still being sane so that you actually can teach in a way that is valuable and not just some burnt out dude like, hey guys, let's build a memory palace. You know?
Yes.
So I decided to try to learn paid traffic, and I am not really that settled with it. It is a way to boost for sure, but it draws to you a completely different kind of humanity, and it's not necessarily what I enjoy doing. And because you have to get a return on investment, then you have to act in certain ways, and you don't have to act that way when you're just giving freely of yourself. You know, it's just like, hey, take it or leave it. This is what I do. This is how I do it.
And exactly. It's so, two completely different frames of being, aren't they? And it's hard to be in one while you're considering the other.
Yeah, especially with the digital footprint that I have. So I don't know. I haven't really settled or sorted it, but I do have a feeling that there must be a compromise. There must be a healthy compromise. And there must be a way to do paid traffic without just creating an ugly monster that it almost certainly can produce.
It can. It does.
I see it all the time. And I'm very outspoken against the Google effect and what's called digital amnesia or even digital dementia. And so how do I survive and thrive and give people great value without actually contributing to the problem at the same time?
Yeah, I completely understand running a similar kind of business myself. So it's you described that so well. So that kind of makes sense of the woman on the computer in the middle, you know, that she's got a kind of dual purpose, and it's a push me, pull me purpose. You know, she's trying to help the car to navigate, but at the same time, she's kind of a barrier. And sometimes the helping works, sometimes the barrier, but whatever, you're back at the beginning again. So it kind of almost reflects metaphorically, doesn't it, from what I can see, the situation that you've described, that, you know, maybe with the paid traffic or with other things, other boost power starts that you're looking at, sometimes they help you, but then maybe your own humanity's barrier comes up and says, no, I don't want to do that, let's go back to the start. So it's that kind of conflict is maybe personified by that woman at the computer. And it's interesting that she's a woman, perhaps more the right brain, creative, helping. How would you see the symbol of a woman in your own dreams?
Well, I would have to pair it with the scroll, and well, you know, Mnemosyne is the goddess of memory. That comes to mind. I'm thinking though that probably, given that it was a scroll and it was coupled with the technology and a character of nurturing one way or the other, I would say that there is some reminder here that one shouldn't whine too much about first world problems and just simply understand that part of what's going on, the need to constantly face change and to be reactive to it and to do so in a way that keeps you healthy, that's not new. That's ancient.
Yes.
And so these problems are definitely to be matched with your best humanity and historical understanding that actually this is a very, very interesting problem to have in the more positive sense of the Chinese proverb.
Yes.
And there's definitely a way to persevere. And so, yeah, I would read it as a positive, nurturing thing and a reminder of history, because that was a scroll. And in some ways, the internet is a scroll, and it still has a lot of scrolling involved.
Mm.
So, yeah, I would read it more on the positive, nurturing and just keep going kind of sense.
Just keep going with constantly reminding yourself of the nurturing aspect of it.
Yeah.
So if you know, normally we'd spend an hour on that, and I would love to spend an hour on that, but you know, that's beautiful. And you could even move, if you wanted to, some kind of dream alchemy of perhaps not spending a lot of time, because you've said, you know, your time is possibly verging on workaholic anyway, but spending a small amount of time maybe creating a scroll, even a handwritten scroll, that somehow encapsulates that timeless story of what you've described there, of, you know, this is a first world problem and just get on and give freely and live life in a balanced way and do what you have to do with your paid ads or whatever it is, but, you know, not make it such a big deal and just keep laying the track in front of you, however it seems to you, to kind of maybe take that symbol from your dream of the scroll and the goddess of memory and the timelessness of the concept and create it as maybe a little handwritten scroll of your own. And in doing that, you're working artistically with your own dream symbols to move them on a little bit more in the direction of nurturing.
That certainly sounds like a good strategy, and it brings to mind that I used to do a lot of spoken word poetry, and I often wrote it all out on map scrolls that would roll out into the audience, and then I would recite from there. And,
perfect.
So maybe I can return to that and get out.
You can return
on the stage.
Return to that. Get out on the stage and do the dream show where you roll out the dream. Yeah, no, I think you're onto it most definitely. And your memory of doing that scroll work before may also be another symbolism, another aspect of the symbolism of your dream scroll there as well. Well, look, it's been absolutely fantastic having you on the show. I know that everyone that's listened to this is probably going to be completely transformed in the way that they now approach remembering their dreams, and that is fantastic. And I hope that they will also visit your website at magneticmemorymethod.com and find out more. And I'm sure they thank you from the bottom of my heart for yet again, Anthony, giving freely of your time, your resources, your information, and I'm sure that you've blessed many people with the ability to remember more of their dreams and therefore get to understand themselves and their worlds and see through more of those illusions that we started the show talking about. So thank you very much.
Well, Jane, thank you for the work that you do, and I appreciate you having this conversation.
Well, I think that was a wonderful way to celebrate our 200th episode, and I'm sure when you wake up tonight, in the middle of the night, and wake up just sufficiently to place a symbol or various aspects of your dreams in your memory palace, that you will wake up in the morning and not only remember your dreams, but you will, on every morning that you wake up and think about your memory palace, remember the dream show and episode 200. That was a fantastic way to celebrate our 200th episode of The Dream Show, I think. And I'd like just to finish by talking just a little bit about dream alchemy. And it's actually from a blog that I wrote in November 2017. So if you prefer to read, you can go to janetheresa.com and read this under November 2017. And I've called it Your Dream Alchemy Prescription. People get quite excited when they hear about it. "Oh, this is amazing," a radio presenter said to me recently during a breakfast show, "and it makes so much sense." We were talking about how to combine the art and science of interpreting dreams, and I gave a very simple example of looking at a dream as an analogy. Imagine you dreamed you couldn't get your car started. You wake up the next day and ask yourself where, in the last 1 or 2 days, you were unable to get something started. Or you couldn't get yourself motivated, you know, couldn't get yourself into drive. Or you felt frustrated that things weren't moving along for you. And if you let the thought percolate, you recognize the situation. You might have been very aware of the feeling at the time, or you might only recognize it on reflection if your feelings were more unconscious. You might have had a brilliant day getting things moving along through Herculean efforts, driving yourself hard, pushing through your doubts about your direction or your abilities, and ploughing on with it anyway, refusing to give in to a desperate need to stop or sleep or rejuvenate or reconsider. But your dream nudged you into noticing that underneath it all, perhaps unconsciously, you were battling a can't get things started or things don't happen for me kind of feeling. Or, more accurately, as you discover when you learn how to interpret your dreams, you were battling an unconscious belief based on past experiences and feelings that moving forward is never easy or that it isn't really desirable. Every dream is unique. And if you've had this kind of dream, the analogy that rings true for you and the conclusions you draw about the conscious and unconscious beliefs and feelings that underpin your situation will be unique to you. But ring true it will. Somewhere deep in your bones or deep in your soul will resonate. So far, so good. And this is not what the radio presenter got so excited about. I'll get to that. In reality, you need a lot more than this one approach to interpret a dream. It's a first step, and a brilliantly helpful first step too. Once you've identified the analogy, you then bring on board a whole set of tools and techniques to complete the process and learn how your mindset is affecting the way you experience life at the moment, and how your life will likely unfold if nothing changes. When you've finished interpreting a dream, you have new awareness. In this example, you might have discovered that the reason why you drive yourself so hard is that you have an unconscious fear of underperforming, or an unconscious belief that you're not good enough, or perhaps that you've discovered you're driven by an unconscious belief that you're lazy, or that it's wrong to be rather than do. The unconscious belief you unearth when you interpret your version of this dream will be unique to you. Where can new awareness take you? You may be able to use your new awareness to make more enlightened, healthy decisions for yourself. But all the while there's still some part of that limiting belief holding its sway over you, you're not really free. Awareness of a long-held, deeply unconscious belief or pattern is a little like becoming acquainted with a neighbour rather than knowing her deeply as a soulmate. You have some level of awareness of a belief that has been influencing you unconsciously, but it still has deep roots you haven't glimpsed yet. So, how do you pluck that limiting belief out? How do you stop it from obstructing your path? How do you remove it to free up your future? You don't. You don't pluck it out, stop it, or remove it. You use dream alchemy practices to transform it into a positive belief or pattern that will support you rather than obstruct you. There are good reasons to transform rather than delete a limiting belief, and you'll discover these when you learn how to prescribe, create, and do dream alchemy. So, why was the radio presenter so excited? On air, I continued with this very simple example. A suitable dream alchemy practice for this dream might be to imagine, when you're awake, that you're back in the dream, only this time it's not with that difficult-to-start car. This time it's a smooth, easy-starting car, perhaps a model and colour that has all the energies that you'd like to feel in your life, and you imagine yourself getting into the car, starting it easily, and driving off. This car is special because it travels at the perfect speed, and you also enjoy stopping for rests or to take a walk along the beach or to change your destination. As you imagine this, you summon up all the positive feelings you're ready to welcome into your life. You engage all the senses. Well, this was radio, so there was only time to paint a rough picture. In reality, a dream alchemy practice is a very carefully crafted to take into account the information gathered from the dream and the healthiest new outcome for the dreamer. Like dream interpretation, it is an art and a science. It involves assessing the dream, making sure the dreamer understands her situation and has as much insight and awareness into it as possible, discussing a plan to transform a key limiting belief, coming up with a prescription for a dream alchemy practice, choosing a modality, they're not always visualizations, creating that practice according to the prescription, and then, crucially, actually doing the practice to a prescribed formula and number of times. If it sounds a bit magical and you're aching for explanation, here it is. Dream alchemy is a process of engaging with symbols from your dream, for example the car, in a way that communicates directly with the unconscious mind. It's the unconscious mind that comes up with our unique and personal dream symbols. So when we want to talk to and transform the unconscious mind, it works best if we communicate in the same language. The results are indeed magical. When you move from interpreting your dreams to understanding them, to doing your dream alchemy practices, life changes swiftly and remarkably around you. As within, so without. Transform the inside, and the outside follows. There is just one proviso. You have to actually do your dream alchemy practice, not just understand it, remark upon its wisdom, intellectualize it, but actually do it. It's a touchy-feely, sensual thing, this conversation with the unconscious. It's a body, heart, and soul thing, and it's very powerful in such a delightful way. And you can learn about how to create powerful dream alchemy over at the Dream Academy at dream-academy-online.com, where you'll find three other courses that I've put up there specially for you to enjoy as well. So it's been a long show. We had to make it long. We had to celebrate our 200th episode of the Dream Show. So thank you for staying with me this length of time. JaneTeresa.com is my website, or dream-academy-online.com for the Dream Academy courses, the online courses that you can do at your own pace, or visit Anthony Mativier's website at magneticmemorymethod.com. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. Our next episode, episode 2001, wow, I don't think I'll be alive by then. Maybe somebody else will have taken on The Dream Show, or maybe we'll be doing it every day. Gosh, I hope not. Once a month kind of works well. Our next episode, episode 201, will come out on the 2nd of March, 2018, if you're listening to this in real time. Of course, you can listen to all episodes of The Dream Show at janetereza.com, and the last 10 are always available on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful month, and I'll see you next episode. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.